The Rookie is a free serialized audiobook meant for mature audiences. Written and performed by number one New York Times bestselling novelist Scott Sigler. For links to order a young adult version of this book without all the cussing in print, ebook, or audiobook, visit scottsigler.com/therookie, one word. This podcast contains mature situations, adult language, and lots of violence. Listener discretion is advised. Hello, junkies. Here we are with part two of the Rookie adult version Q&A. We got so many questions, we couldn't even get through them in 3 hours worth of podcasting. This is another 90-minute or so episode. Hope you guys enjoy hearing your fellow junkies ask questions of me and me answering, and questions of Big John Viscara, continuity czar for the Siglerverse. And who knows, your own question may be in here somewhere. It's a very long episode, so we're going to get right into it. We'll be back next week with a brand new story, something we're starting out, something very experimental. Hopefully you guys will join us for that. But without further ado, here we go with the Rookie Q&A Part 2. Hello, everyone. Happy Wednesday. This is the second episode of the Rookie Adult Version Q&A. A got assaulted. That's the wrong word. A got a fusillade of questions came in this week, including a whole bunch that came in today. Because you're all lollygaggers. What do? You lollygag to first. You lollygag to second. You're lollygagging all over the place.
I will give you guys this. There are a handful of you who were super smart and were like, you know what I'm going to do? I didn't realize that we were going to get to talk to Big John Viscara as well.
That's of course what happened.
So I have to send in a handful of questions that A has to answer, John has to answer, and sometimes Scott has to
Shannon.
Answer.
Hey, Shannon. What's up, girl?
Hey, Shannon, he says.
Shannon, I know that Shannon watched Martin and also thought, Gina was the business. I'm going to take a wild guess. Shannon and I have a lot in common.
But Shannon is also like a billion years younger than we are.
I bet she watched Martin, dude. I bet it was in reruns or something. Do they have reruns anymore? That's how old we are.
I think you can just YouTube it now or stream it.
You can. All right. So we didn't get mutual adoration. No, I did. I told you you look gorgeous.
And I said that you were adorable.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. thank you so much. I'm so flattered. Let's see. Let's go to...
Oh, Shannon said, fuck yeah, she did.
Yeah, that's my girl. There we go. All right.
And hey,
of course,
Mike, nice to see you.
Let's switch over to your cam, Sugar Plum, because we have a special guest in the house once again. Here he is, Big John Viscara!
Uh-oh.
What we got in the message today? Oh, beer.
So you guys who are in the chat room or listening to this on Sunday or Monday or next week, John is currently wearing a hat that has a little scrolling LED sign, sort of a John Tweedy-esque kind of thing. And it currently says, oh, beer. Why do you hate me so? And the reason that he's wearing that is a thing. Is it Quentin who says that, John?
It's John Tweedy.
Tweedy. That's what I figured. It's John Tweedy who says that. But the reason John Tweedy says that is that I think it was Siglerfest 2017 or 18, I think. But somewhere kind of in there, at a Siglerfest the next morning, after a late night of beer drinking, this was the thing that he posted on Facebook and said at breakfast. And Scott was like, oh, that's absolutely going in a book.
That's going in a book. That is absolutely going in a book.
How are you, John?
Doing well, thank you.
Good.
John, I just changed. That's the chat. Let's go to, I screwed that up. My bad.
Uh-oh.
Let's go to
what you doing?
Well, I'm trying to figure out this chat guest. I just screwed up. I'm going to everybody watch the magic, the TV magic, as I fix this again. While John walks us through his very, very Sigler-specific office for doing the Sigler work.
Yeah, look at all that.
So John, show us the setup.
You?
So this is my typical setup for when I'm working on a book. So I've got my stack of books with their hardcover inserts that I like to reference for a lot of extra information. And then this is my iBooks version of all the EPUB editions of the Sigler books that I can easily search through.
What's up, Jude?
For particular phrases or that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got all these different windows open, including the manuscript that I'm editing, previous versions of the manuscript to check against that. notes that I keep, and the summaries that I write up for Scott. And then on this side here, there's more referencing. This is the Quith eye chart. There's the explanation of the seasons for the GFL and how they wrap around and overlap between tier two and tier three. And then a couple other files and everything. Anyway, this is a typical kind of setup for when I'm doing the continuity editing.
Right.
And I want to tell you guys, if you look at that, not the one that has the book covers on it, but the monitor behind him that doesn't, that has those colorful things and all those data and all that, that is not a thing that Scott gave John or John. This is for John to do his job for Empty Set. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. The amount of luck and grace that we have to know John and his gorgeous wife, Kim, as well. But the amount of grace that we have as a tiny, tiny business to have John care this much about this second or maybe third job. I don't even know. But at least second job that he has. He has a normal life and job and wife and
John,
friends.
John's
and he does
an extra,
this too. So we're very lucky.
John's an extra on In Living Color to also go way back in time. And he got many jobs. He only got four jobs. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is John's office. That is awesome. Let's get back to Maine real quick. Pep over here. Pep to your camp.
Okay.
Real quick, let's go. We've got, of course, what's coming up in this episode? Big John in the house again. Junkie Pet Celebrations, Junkie Picks are next. They're coming up next week. You got to stay to the end, you guys. Very super important major announcement that if you don't pay attention at the end, you're going to get a zit like right here.
I don't even know what that is.
It's terrible.
So I guess I should pay attention
because
Christmas is coming.
I get to tease you because next week on December 14th, is that right? Do I have that right?
Sure. Why not? Today's the 7th.
December 14th, we start our new show and it is some batshit crazy shit. It is bonkers. Where
I don't
it's
know if
sex
you guys
nose.
Heard. Look,
there's
every
a lot
time
of
you raise
sweaty
that white
bondage
paper,
lever.
Yep. Raise up. Changes mine. I become very tangerine.
Are you a V? Are
no,
you a visitor?
I'm a Vivitch.
Okay. You're my Vivitch.
Yeah.
So stay tuned to the end. I'll explain to you what's going on. And then, of course, real quick, let's go through. Of course, you should be signed up for SMS messages. Text SIGTEXT to 855-955-5095. We're well over 500 people now. And the next goal will be to get it to 1,000. We send out simple little text messages to let you know things like live stream is on. We have an episode dropping. All the important book news. And, of course, you also might as well, that's info at Empty Set. It's a newsletter. You also might as well be on the newsletter. You can get all the news that's fit for it. Slightly more detailed info goes on the newsletter once a month, once every 2 months. We don't really hammer on it too much, but we'll make sure you guys know what's coming up.
So before we begin with the questions, which we're about to get to, because there are a billion of them, or maybe a few less than a billion, I want to say this. In this past week, and I don't know if it's because Christmas is coming, the holidays are coming, Hanukkah is coming, Thanksgiving just ended, we've had a handful of people, and I'm not going to name who you are, but at least three of you have reached out to say, thank you so much for doing this. This has been a crazy time in my life, and it's just nice to have a thing to, I appreciate that you guys make the time to do this. And I've said this a bunch of times on this cast, and I'll say it a bunch more. There is zero chance that we're doing this just for you guys. So never feel like I had a couple of people reach out and say, like, I'm so sorry to bother you. I know that you have a whole job to do. Never feel like that. We do this because we also appreciate the community that we created with you guys. So reach out when you need to.
Ma'am, we got to work on our sales philosophy.
What's
you
that?
Don't admit you like what you're doing.
When
you were selling a product, you want them all to think that this is all for them and not for us. That's how sales works.
Never. Because you know what? We are not selling. What we're doing is creating a community that matters
ABS,
just as much
always
to
be
us,
selling, bro. Always be selling.
As it does to some of you guys.
Okay, tell them about this real quick. Boom!
Okay, yeah. Bam! So there's a junkie party once a month. It's the first Saturday of every month. Our good friend Steve Rickyberg runs the whole thing, and he runs it for hours and hours. So no matter where you are in the world, you can join. You can pop in and pop out. He spends the entire, I don't know, I think it's like 8 hours there. I joined this. I know I missed the last couple of months, but I joined this past Saturday. It was super duper fun. I had a little too much to drink, I think, because I hadn't had dinner. But it was super fun. And I told you guys I had a little bit of a head cold. That's going better. But I'm also planning on joining on the 7th of January. So if you guys want to pop in at any time, you can just follow that link and do that. And that would be fun.
Rosa, you don't know me. You don't know. You say the Sigler smiles don't lie. You don't know me. I can fake. It's why all of my
Rosie
photos.
Rosie's a friend of mine, though, so she knows me.
In all of my smiles, or in all of my pictures, I'm always smiling. You guys know this. Every picture, I'm not smiling ever because I'm very good at. Okay, I'm not good at faking a smile. So if I smile, that's probably a real thing. Let's start to get into the business. Here we go. First of all, we got to take a quick break. I would like all of you who have a beverage to prepare your beverage. I would like all of you who just have a regular glass of water, prepare that. And if you don't, I would like you to hold up an imaginary glass because I would like to thank all of you for this incredibly momentous, fantastic thing that just happened this week. You know, I've been calling for you guys to leave your reviews on Audible for Mount Fitzroy to try and get over 4,000. We are now at 4,007. I'll highlight it, but I don't know if you can see it. Bang. Wow. Incredible. 4,000.
Not sure what happened over Thanksgiving weekend, but we love it.
For Mount Fitzroy, and we are over the moon with this. This, every time it goes up in increments, probably 250 to 500, et cetera, that gives a little juice to the algorithm on Audible. And these are, as we say, if we get over 4,000. If you get over 2,000, you're crushing it. If you get over 4,000, those are big boy numbers. Earth Cores closing in at 13,000 because it's a runaway hit for us. But thank you so much.
Yeah, we
thank
really
you for reviewing it. And if you are an Audible customer, leave a review if you haven't already. And if you are an Amazon customer, same thing. Leave a review. Goodreads, leave a review. The best thing you can do for an author besides buying the books is to go in and leave reviews.
Yeah.
Rate stuff. It's very important. Oh, there's Sexy Ray Porter. Check him out.
Hi, Tiny.
He's doing the new book, too. All right.
Yeah, he is.
All right, let's go back to Maine. Now, we got a lot of questions, you guys. So that took a whopping 12 minutes.
We're already going to go to 90 minutes here, so we're going to
so many questions that we can't answer them all. So I'm going to try and do shorter answers. So this is the lightning round for the next 45 minutes. I'll do the best I can. You know, I'm long-winded. That's why I tell stories on paper. So because I'm short,
which are long-winded and girthy, as you already know.
Well, I got know what
you
got.
Girth this dog. Over a little bit.
What you want?
You just scoot this over here. Yep, perfect.
Like that?
Yep.
Okay, you got it.
Okay, so will do two things really quickly. I will say, Christine McCullough, I see your questions about an advent calendar. We do have a puppy advent calendar that we've been giving them every day. We don't have the time for this today, but I'll give them their treats next week on the cast. How about that? We'll do it that way.
Ray Porter is confirmed for Shakedown Book One of the Crypt, ladies and gentlemen. Ray Porter is doing the Crypt Book One.
You just got to see Ray.
I did. I got to see Ray. Right? Got to do a reading with Ray and with Peter Kleins.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Jonathan the Man Mayberry was ill. He couldn't make it. All right. Enough of that. Let's get to it.
All right. So we're going to start with a question for you, Scott. And then we're going to do a couple questions for you, John, coming up. But
all right.
First
we got a big crop on Twitch. Hello, everybody on Twitch. Remember on Twitch, you can see this chat when I flash on the screen, but most of what the Twitch readers see is each other's chat. So talk to each other. Have a good time.
And weird, if you're Isaac, I'm going to ask your question today. So stay tuned.
Yep.
From Adam Waugh, he says, I love all the timelines and stories in the Siglerverse. Looking forward to what the Crypt series will bring.
Mm-hmm.
As for the crew of the Oleron, will there be any more backstory for Zan in future books or even a short story like there was for the creation of the Prawat?
Okay, back to Maine. You're going to see the crew of the Oleron in GFL Book 7 and in the finale GFL Book 8. As to if I will get to another adventure with them, I don't know. We have so much on our plate and so many wonderful opportunities, including one we're going to tell you about at the end of this episode. So I can't say whether I'll write another one. But gosh, I sure would like to, because that's a wonderful little, you know, Firefly-esque type crew. You can tell so many super fun stories with those guys. So we will see how that goes. But you will definitely be seeing them at least twice more in significant roles. And all of the hanging chads left from the Stone Wolves are going to be answered in 7 and 8.
I just saw the Lundys are in the chat. I hope you guys are both doing well.
What's up, Lundys? Woo!
You guys are both doing well. They are COVID recovering. That's a public knowledge info thing. So taking care of each other and taking care of themselves.
Hope you get better soon, guy.
This is a question that came in from Emily Jacobs specifically for John. You can answer it if you want to, but this was literally just for John. If you could meet the Krakens, what would you say to them, and who would you meet first?
Oh, boy. I'm sure it'd be John Tweedy that I would want to meet first. He just seems such a powerful personality. I can't imagine him being second in line to anyone else that I would want to be. As for what I would ask them, I have no idea. Probably how they manage to show up for work every week and not die, because it seems like something that's pretty inevitable. And obviously it's a high contact, pretty tragic or dangerous job. So, I'd love to meet John Tweedy.
Do you have an NFL team that's your favorite?
I do. I was born in Chicago, so Chicago Bears are one of my team. But I have lived the majority of my life in California, so the Niners are my team. I root for both teams, and whenever they play each other, I root for whoever is the home team.
Yep, that's interesting. Okay, so do you want to answer that question? If you could meet the Krakens, have an on-field time with them, what would you do?
Ooh, probably the Krakens.
Yeah,
Bumper Puff, no question. I want to hang out with Cormoran Bumper Puff and just like hand him the phone book. Could you read this to me? Yes, I can. John Viz Gara 612, and I would just sit there and have a cocktail and listen to that. It'd be fantastic.
I'm not going to answer that question about what I would do if I met the Krakens, but I will say that I have been saying for years and years, my very favorite character in The Sigler versus John Tweedy. I think he's iconic. I think he'll survive past Scott's 133 years. I think he will eventually be like a pop culture reference. That's what I think.
A zebra can't change its stripes, bro. Can't do it.
Zebra can't change its spots.
Spot. God, I miss it.
Hey, Bruce Press. I love you.
Hey,
it's
Bruce.
Good to see you. And
East
you can
Coast
hear this
time,
on Monday.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah. Dial in on Monday. Yep.
All right,
next question. Let's rock. Let's rock. Boom. Churn.
Jamie, this is actually for both gentlemen on the cast with me tonight. Jamie Easley said, I love the characters in Scott's books that are hateable. Like Agnes,
thank you.
Aronofsky, to name just a couple, and Agnes Paglioni as well. Is there a special inspiration for these peeps? And for John, is it just as easy to review their dialogue as everybody else's, or do you get emotional about
Let's go, John.
John first.
It's not that much more difficult to review those that dialogue. I mean, I recognize that they're jerks. I'm not sure that I've ever recommended that someone needs to be more jerky. I do remember a couple of times where I've had to say that there was something that was a little uncharacteristically there was something about Kimberlyn that was a little more petulant than he was used to. And so there was some dialogue changes in there, but for all the evil villains and everything, I hate them from the get go. And I continue to hate them through the editing life that I experienced them. So yeah, they're just as easy to hate as the others are to love.
And that's a super important part of John's job, is to go through it. And he's not only got to look for the nuts and bolts of what is screwed up, and like I said, 4 + 3 = 2 here, so now over here it equals 8. He has to fix those. It's also sniffing out the character continuity. You know, little things like, yeah, are you sure he would say this at this point in his current state of mind? And both of those things John is really good at.
Sorry, you guys. I wasn't ready for the straw in my drink.
What was
the... knocked everything over.
I'm so sad. Do I do anything special for coming in with the bad guys?
Yeah, I love the character in Scott's books. For Scott, is there a special inspiration for any of these people?
No, because one of the main things I'm always trying to do with the bad guys is, it's a cliche term, but it's true, everyone is the hero of their own story. And I often go back to saying that the dudes who flew planes into the World Trade Center were so convinced they were doing the moral thing and the right thing that they were willing to sacrifice their lives for that thing.
You see it 100 times.
Those guys, as reprehensible as that act was, they believed 100% that they were doing the right thing. Without the moral thing, without doubt. So that's what I usually always channel when it comes time to channel bad guys. I kind of channel suicide bombers. You know, someone who believes that strongly, or has been convinced to believe that strongly, that they can do this harm to other people, and it's the right thing to do. That makes it super easy to write the bad guys. Because all of my bad guys, if I was to write the book from a slightly different point of view, they would be the heroes, and Quentin and everybody else would be the villains and the bad guys.
And I will say this as well. For sure, pandemic is the for this specific question, this specific idea of being the hero of your own story, pandemic is the one I get the most, well, Scott gets the most emails about, which I receive first. And they always look like this. Oh, sure, sure, I get it. So if you're a person who loves the president in pandemic, you say, sure, sure, shove it, shove your liberal politics down our throats with the captain of the submarine at the beginning of the book. And if you love the captain of the submarine at the beginning of your book, you do, sure, sure, shove your politics down my throat. The president is the one who belongs in the story. And they are vociferous and passionate and not just spouting, you know, rhetoric. They are literally talking about why this is important. And I get more emails about that specific book in this way than any other book. So it's pretty interesting to me.
Everybody, Mario's in the house. Say hi to Mario in the chat room. Next question. Let's go. Let's rock and roll.
All right. Let me cross this off. From Dan Baker, we have this.
Oh, time out. Quick question with Sean Dyer. John, make this answer short. How often do you get distracted while doing your job and get absorbed in the story and then kind of have to go back and reread?
That does happen, but I tend to read the book out loud. Mm-hmm. So I it's not too hard for me to recognize when I'm getting too far into it and I need to step back and be more objective about it. So it does happen, but I usually catch myself as it's happening, so it doesn't. I don't lose too much time in retracting and rereading. And I have to reread things over and over again anyway. So
yeah, for sure.
All right, that's a really good idea. I might do that. I don't do that.
Okay, back to chat. Let's go. Next question. Boom.
Okay, this one is for you. It's from Dr. Daniel Baker, PhD.
Oh, geez.
He says, you have said many times you have more story ideas than you can ever write. Mm-hmm. So how do you decide what to write and in what order and in what format? And has that process changed throughout your career?
As far as deciding what to write, that is the constant gnashing of the teeth in the Sigler household, trying to figure that out.
We've literally been doing that for 2 weeks now.
2 weeks straight. Every night for 2 weeks straight, we have been pouring a drink and sitting there talking about what we're going to do next Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So it is, I already have massive FOMO about everything all the time, something my poor beleaguered wife has to deal with constantly.
Not everything.
And
he loves all food.
Yeah, well, that's
all
true.
All food. Except for celery. Other than that.
So that is a constant. It is a the major stress point in this house is finishing books because I get distracted and want to go do something else. And the second thing is, what do we write next? Because now we've been doing this for 20 years. We have enough experience to know, like, if I pick the wrong project and spend 12 to 18 months on the wrong project.
Or three years doing a trilogy.
And I guessed wrong, and there was this other thing that would have punched way above its weight class. That causes an enormous amount of stress around here because they're all my babies and I want to do all of them. Did I answer the question?
You did. I will say in the chat room that we can see, so it's on Facebook. If you're not on Facebook, I'll just read it to you. Daniel Lundy said whatever A tells him is next, and that is not necessarily wrong, but I will tell you, with this new project that you guys have heard about here on Sigler in Place, where next Wednesday we're going to start doing a new live fiction reading that he writes once a week, I have had to be like, listen, I did say there's one property, I'm not going to talk about which one, you guys haven't heard of it. No, you can't do that. That's bigger and better than this project. You can't do that. It's too much.
Yeah.
But I've been saying like, okay, so today I'm just going to be advocating for A, and next week I'm going to be advocating for B, and next week I'm going to be advocating for A. And that's what I do every day because they're both viable projects. And I can't make that decision because he's the one who has to live with it every day for 4 hours a day. You know?
Basically, so. I have in the fridge a 18 pack of eggs, and every single egg that I would serve you would be the single most delicious egg you have ever had in your life. And the burden upon poor me, what I have to do to get through the day is try and decide which of these impossibly delicious eggs to serve you. And that's the stress I take on for you guys. Because I love you. All right.
I'm picking up all my ice. Give me one sec.
Go back to the main camera. There's no problem here, ladies and gentlemen. No problem whatsoever. All right.
There's just ice on our hardwood floor, so I had to pick it up.
All right, baby. Next question. Martin, what's up? All right.
Okay, so.
You, Tracy, you cannot have the chocolate egg. Whoops. Back here. They're all chocolate eggs. That's the fact. Oh, they're all chocolate and peanut butter and have high protein and make you live 10 years longer. It's a fact.
Kim Hansen asked, does Scott prefer writing standalone stories or books or multiple volume series and why?
Well, I haven't done very many standalone books because I'm stupid. And I just promised myself after getting through book 6 of the GFL that I would not write another series, a trilogy at the most, and then sign a deal for 5 books for The Crypt. Because of all of you people. I think I like writing the series more because I can get more into detail. It takes longer to flesh out stuff, and there's more delightful surprises for you in the series. When you write a single book, it's a little bit easier for the audience to go, oh, I see why he is showing me this baseball bat in the closet. You see that, and it's not bad, but it's much easier for a certain type of reader to detect when that thing is going to come up, when Chekhov's baseball bat is going to come up. When you do it in a series, though, you get to do that and kind of hide it. And then when it comes up 3 books later, and this is a small delight, but there's like 10% of the readers who email and go, is that the same shit you showed 3 books ago and then just didn't say anything about it? And I'm like, yes, it is. And that is a very special experience as a reader, so that makes me very happy. What we'd like to do in 5 years from now is start to get into like 3 years of one-offs. Boom, 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 because those are much easier to sell as movies, and that's still a primary goal for us at Empty Set, is to see our stuff made into movies and TV series. All right, what's next?
I have to find a specific question.
Great, I'll answer
in the meantime,
in the chat room.
No, in the meantime, I'll ask you from Nick Burke. If you have time, can you say, did you get to watch the Hard Knocks series about the Lions?
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead and do that while I find a specific question that I want to ask.
Back to Maine. Not only did I get to watch it, I fucking adored it. It was great. If you follow football and read up on rosters and stuff, even to a small degree, you already care about these young men and this huge opportunity that they have. You already know that 90% of them will not be there in 3 years. And there's a wonderful level of excitement and opportunity and endless potential coupled with heartbreak and irreplaceable loss throughout the whole. That is part of the drama that makes sports great, is once you get deep into a team, yes, of course you have your stars. You've got your superstars that'll be there for 10 years and be world famous, but you also have all of the other people who are on the cusp of greatness or missing out on the dream of their life. So that is riveting to me all the time. But getting to watch it, the level of detail they put into the Hard Knocks series for the Lions, and even if you guys are not football fans outside of the GFL, I highly recommend, if you can cop somebody else's password for HBO, you go watch it, because it gives you a different perspective on how hard these people work to attain their dreams. And I loved it. And there's a couple of great stories. There's one guy, there's a linebacker who was, you know, fourth round draft pick. Now he's a starter and a key player for the Lions and will be there for the next 5 years. And then there's other people who were, you know, also lower round draft picks or third round draft picks who aren't even there anymore. It's fucking heartbreaking, and I loved every drippy emotional moment of it.
And I'll say this, you guys know that, or you may know, I have Jude, my brother, who is in the chat room, football fan his entire life. The worst thing I ever did to him, if I don't miss my mark, is he had a 1976 Pittsburgh Steelers empty beer can that had the whole Steelers on it, and I picked a fight with him, or we got in a fight or something, and I think I stepped on it. It might have been our mom who did it, but I think it was me who stepped on it. And if I don't miss my mark, he probably still has that little crushed, half-crushed can somewhere. So I didn't get into football until 2009, when he told me I had to pick an NFL team, not the Krakens. But watching Hard Knocks with Scott, I learned a ton about football that I never learned before. So if you ever get a chance to watch it, even if you're a Krakens fan and not really an NFL fan, go ahead and watch it. You'll learn a whole bunch about the
sport. Brendan, if you can hang till the end of the episode, I will tell you what is coming next. We'll talk about it a little bit after the end of the hour. We'll roll long and tell you guys what's coming up.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of questions for both gentlemen on the cast.
All right, let's get John back up.
For you both, Number one.
Let's do this. I guys, I'm sorry. I know I'm screwing with the layout all the time, but I'm trying to make sure that John is presented properly.
I know. He does all the work.
The proper John Viscara when we have an opportunity. Go ahead, babe.
So I'll ask you, while he's futzing, John, I'll ask you, who is your favorite Sigler character?
Ooh.
Sigler character. Gosh. I kind of... It's probably not a very popular choice, but I really like Angus Cool. Angus yes. is a villain, but he's also so integral and part of the main story. He seems to be like he's always included in the narrative and the discussion, even when he's not in the scene. He's such a powerful personality that he's talked about by other characters, even when he's not in the scene. And he's super smart. I feel like he's a pretty well developed bully, even though he claims to be the bully. He's a victim of physical bullying, but he's a mental bully, and I don't mm-hmm. think he acknowledges or realizes that, and it makes his pain that much more delicious. I just really like the Angus Cool character.
That's great. Yep.
How about you?
I've depends on the day by and large, but you know,
but right now
I also like Angus Cool a lot. Because, as John points out, he is a bully, but he is the smartest motherfucker in the room.
He's the smartest person he's ever met.
He's the smartest. Yeah. He's literally the smartest person he's ever met. And I enjoy Angus because Angus, and I can guarantee there's a few people in the chat room right now have gone through these experiences. When you are the smart oddball in high school and in junior high, and then you start to come into your own, and you develop a little bit of swagger. You develop a little bit of swagger, like, I'm good at these things, and fuck all those people who made my life difficult. And Angus is that exponential to a huge degree, to the point where he's like, he's so wicked smart, he could change history. So I enjoy watching his arc quite a bit. All right, boom.
So I'm going to say this before I ask the second question. My answer to this is the same for the first question and the second question that I'm about to ask. And my favorite character in the Siglerverse is Red Man. And that is my favorite short story as well, or my favorite story as well. That is the second question. We did answer it last week, so I'll also say this. If I had to pick a second one, it would be Clayton Detweiler, because he's just so curmudgeonly and
he's very curmudgeonly.
Has been doing his job well for literal decades, and I would love to know what that feels like. Like, I would love to know. I know exactly what to do. This horse, this cow is doing that. I know exactly what to do.
I'll make this quick, but Clayton Detweiler is a fascinating character to me because, you know, He's basically a groundskeeper, a janitor, to that degree. But all of these jobs that are somewhat dismissed, and like when you're not going to see a reboot of Dallas or Falcon Crest, where the janitor is a main character, and yet these people are all, you know, they're very focused and very good at what they do, and when they are exceptional at what they do, they become invisible. Mm-hmm. The invisible people who are exceptional at their job. And that's, he's a little more mouthy, though. He's a little more mouthy.
He is. All and right. that being exceptional about what you do makes you invisible is exactly how I feel about our in-book designer, Donna Mugavero. She is exceptional at what she does because when we give her a book, she makes her job completely invisible, and that's beautiful, and I love that. So the second question that Daniel Ball asked was what your favorite Sigler story was, and both, at least John answered that, and I answered that, and I don't think you can answer that. John answered The Passenger is his favorite story last week. So I'm going to skip that for now so that we get to new questions. This is also a question for both of you gentlemen.
Great.
Mark Duval asks, Scott, which of your own character deaths was the hardest for you? Mm. And does Big John V agree, or is his different?
John, you go first.
I think, so obligatory spoiler, right?
Spoiler. Yeah, spoiler alert. Thank you. Yes, this whole thing is spoilers all the way down.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest ones for me was Clarence Otto. I really was hoping that he was going to be part of you know, any subsequent, you know, activity that happens with DST in any of the books. And for him to have had the going out that he did, that was really rough. It worked. It was beautifully done, wonderfully written. I wish I could have I wish I could have taken it back or come up with a reason why continuity wise it didn't fit. But
I love to hear that, John. I like that.
A little bit of evil. Finally, a little bit of evil out of John, just a little bit. Like I'm gonna pull the puppet strings a little bit.
I legitimately don't even pull punches when I don't like when I emotionally don't like as a reader something that happens. I tell him to fix it. He hardly ever does. He never does, actually. But you have the right answer. Like, no, you can't do that continuity wise. We need Clarence.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
The death that was the hardest for me. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert. Yes. Perry and Contagious was very difficult for both the creator writing reasons and the ramifications of killing off franchise character. Did not realize how significant killing off franchise character could be. So from the business perspective, I learned a lot about that moment. I'm going to do it again, but
Sometimes you got it. Now
I know what I'm giving up by doing that. But from the emotional perspective, that dude came such a long way, both from the backstory before Infected, then his ordeal in Infected, then you see how far he came in Contagious. And his last couple of lines in Contagious, where he knows what's about to happen to him, and he simultaneously can't argue with the decision, and also can't believe that decision was made. That push pull, that grinding right there, to me is I get choked up every fucking time I read it. So that was my worst one.
And it's funny, Daniel did not ask me, but I'm going to answer very quickly and say I agree with John. The hardest death that I think I've ever had to read in the Siglerverse is Clarence Otto. A handful of you are talking about Book or Worm in the chat room, and I will give you that. But he was so emotionally well developed for his own life that it was harder for me to watch Clarence. Now, before Clarence, spoiler alert as well, it was Margot. It was Margot.
That was a rough
and
death.
So part of the reason, and part of it is because Margot would have done that had she been in her right mind. She would have made that choice herself. She always put herself before everything else. And then that Clarence losing Margot didn't change his fate. Just kills
yep.
me.
Yep.
Just
some people are cursed.
Kills me.
Some people are cursed. Some people are cursed. Some people get married to her and have an awesome life. Some people don't. So that's kind of the way it goes. Mm. All right. Next question. Let's go. Let's rock and roll.
Justin Black asks, what's your routine every day when you get to work? What operations do you go through before you start working?
Here's the deal. So the operations that go before I start working happen the night before when I finish the workday, and I have to have a calendar reminder to finish the workday. Otherwise, I will just work until I fall asleep at the desk. Then I shut down my work computer, move that to another room, make sure the desk is clean, and then I set up the writing computer. The writing computer runs from 8:30 till 12:30. It has no social media, no email, no nothing, only a web browser and a Microsoft Word, and that is it. And so that is the process. And once I'm in this room you're looking at right now, if I don't have little messages popping up or the phone beeping or whatever, the 4 hours goes by so fast, I'm not even sure I'm sane. So that is the procedure. We figured that out about 6-7 months ago. And now that will be the procedure from here on out.
4 months ago. But yes, we did.
Yeah, you people and your time. Whatever.
Isaac, who I believe is on Twitch. Isaac the Weird is on Twitch right now. He has a couple of questions. First, is the Combine in the Rookie and later GFL books a reference to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Is the Combine a reference to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? I'm not going to say no because I might have dropped lines because I drop movie lines and everything all the time. But the Combine is an actual real thing. It's a real, not to the extent you see in the GFL, but these young men have to.
I'm not sure I understand.
Jeez, she's crazy.
God damn, Siri.
These young men have to go do this thing called the Combine. And the Combine, of course, is a huge amount of physical tests. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'll make this as quick as I can. When you have to run your 40, when you have to run your 30, when you have to do your shuttle drill, all these little things you have to do, the knowledge that if you miss a step, if you screw something up, you could be missing out on, you could be the difference between you being a late second round pick and a high fourth round pick, which could mean the loss of $100,000 to $500,000 to your family. It's an enormous amount of pressure. Then on top of that, you still have to go through the Wunderlich test, which is to measure your football intelligence. They're looking at your IQ. They're looking at your grades. They're looking at did you serve in the community? Did they look
at your social standing?
And then they have just general interviews where you are like a 20 year old person, and you sit down with all these adults who are effing grilling, and you know that every single syllable you say is the difference between where you get drafted and how much money you will make before you are too physically damaged to continue the sport. So the combine is an absolutely grueling thing that not a lot of people understand. So that in itself is what the combine is supposed to be, which is magnified. I probably have one flew over the cuckoo's nest. Let's go. Next question.
From Scott Atkins. The first one's super easy. The first time EarthCore was cast was in 2005. The rewritten EarthCore was podcast, I think, in 2019. I'm not exactly sure, but the one that you can buy in stores today is later. It's 2017, 18, 19-ish, something like that. John will probably correct me shortly. But your second question, this is a question I will answer. Are we ever going to get to hear Mount Fitzroy? I've been waiting a long time for that. Because I can't manage audiobooks only podcasts. Now here's the answer. It's hard to take. Never. We will never podcast Mount Fitzroy, and it's because the publisher who bought it is Audible.
Yep.
And Audible gave us concessions to promote Audible, like in our contract with them, but they were not willing to give us podcast rights ever to this. And we've revisited it a couple of times. I will say this, there may be, in the future, things may change, but right now we gave up. We talked a ton about it with you guys on this cast, but no, we will never podcast Mount Fitzroy. So if you want to read it and you don't do audiobooks, you can get an ebook or tree book, and that will be the only way you get to read it.
Just so you know, we've literally got 15 minutes left.
No, that's only till 7. We're going to 7:30. Both of these are 90 minutes.
Got great. Yeah. Let's go. What do we got?
Spoiler alert, you guys. I will ask a question from somebody who personally knows Scott right now.
Oh, Jesus
His name
Christ.
Is Ryan Minto. He went, to college with you, right?
Or well, we worked together.
Okay.
A long time ago.
He asked, did you consult your legendary dad or your brother while creating the character for Hook or the Hook Chest?
No, I did not consult my father, because my father would look at everything Hook or the Hook Chest does and say, that's ridiculous. When at the same time, everything Hook or the Hook Chest does is my dad. So this is the perspective of watching a championship caliber football coach at the high school level. I was not a star player. As any of you who've met me in person see this, the breadth of this chest and the height and the power in this body. I was never destined to be a great football player. Also, I couldn't kick the ball more than 15 yards. People look like me usually kick the ball. But watching him do what he did to improve the lives of many, many young men, and when he coached track, many young women, I got to watch all this shit. And he will tell you that none of this happened. Everything Coach Hillcore the Hook Chest says is words out of my father's mouth. So I didn't have to model anything. I'm just like, I remember this. That was it. Yeah, simple.
And
easy.
I will add that I have heard Coach Sigler, old Coach Sigler, which is what he calls himself, because of course Scott's brother is young Coach Sigler. I have heard out of his mouth, I know you're better than this. I know you have this in you. I know you can do better. I don't understand what's wrong. Is it me? Am I not helping you? I've heard that. I've also heard Blue Twisted Steel and Sex Appeal.
Out of my dad's. I'll tell you this. We'll move to the next question. Last part of this. My dad had the single best way to insult you and yet not insult you at the same time. And that was, I'm going to go and throw one of my friends high school under the bus. His name is Ron Brown. Ron Brown was about 225, 230 when he was a junior. And absolutely the nicest fucking human being I've ever met in my entire fucking life. There's just no one as nice as this bitch. He was so fucking nice. But when you get on a football field, he's this giant, strong farm boy. And he should be just throwing people around left and right. But he was a little bit too nice to play football. So my dad, like he would make a mistake. And my dad would look at him and be like, Ron Brown, how do you not know? You're smarter than this. You're probably the smartest guy in this field. How do you not know when to pull on a 36th keep? Come on, Ron Brown, you're smarter than this. And that was, I always remember that because it's not an insult to tell someone they are smart. And yet to say, you're not being as smart as you are, what's wrong with you, is an insult.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's wonderful. All right, let's go.
So this
Shannon.
This is specifically for John, but you can answer it too if you want. Mm-hmm. Lily Higgins asks, John, what is the weirdest thing you've ever had to do in the name of research and continuity for Empty Sack?
I got nothing. John, it's up to you.
I think the strangest thing was when we were, it was when I was editing Pandemic and you had made a reference about, University of Michigan or something like that. And I raised the question to you. I said, is the University of Michigan near where the explosion was in Contagious?
That's
and
right.
would it have, would it be in the radioactive zone, and would it even be an operating university at that time? And within like a minute and a half, Scott says, "Oh yeah, no, it's located in this particular city. It's this many miles away, and you can see he drops me this screenshot of this nuclear cloud over the map, and says it's outside of the area that would be affected." And I said, "Did you just come up with that? How is it that you have radioactive fallout modeling software at the ready where you can just look this kind of thing up?" And he says, "Oh yeah, I have to use this thing all the time." So that was quite an eye opener.
All the time I have to figure out whether everyone watching here, whether if your city gets nuked, your town gets nuked, what happens? I know.
Yeah. I will also.
Or if you want to know, just ask Scott.
Also add, since you mentioned that, there was also, while he was writing Fitzroy, which, if you haven't read, spoilers, is underground, a lot of underground. He reached out to a bunch of spelunkers, cave dwellers, all people who were specifically trying to go as deep into the earth as they could as a human being. And one of the answers back was like, "Well, this is lovely. I would love to talk to you, but I'm about tomorrow to go underground. I won't be back for 3.5 weeks and nobody can reach me."
Yeah.
And I was like, why would anybody do that? Why would anybody go somewhere for almost a month where no one can reach you? And that means you can't reach anyone.
Because they want to be killed in one of my novels is why.
True. But that's
why you go underground for 3 weeks. Goddamn. Let's go.
Brian Trotter asks, longtime listener, first time caller, did you know when you wrote The Rookie that Quentin's father... Quentin's father was the killer with his amazing power. Follow-up, did you know that Yitzhak was in the ZG as well?
I will be honest. No, I don't think I knew. I don't think when I wrote The Rookie, I don't think I knew that Quentin's father was the killer. And that broader thing. I knew that his father had something going on. And then there's some shit you guys are going to see in the next 5 years. The part you will see in the next 5 years is stuff that I knew. Whether it was physically a killer. No, what was the second part of that question, honey?
Did you know that Yitzhak was in the ZG?
100%. Yeah, Yitzhak was. And John, you call me my bullshit because my memory is not so good.
But I believe
I knew that Yitzhak was going to be a much bigger deal than he was portrayed to be in The Rookie. John, is that true, or did I just make that shit up to make myself sound better?
I'm not so sure about The Rookie, but for sure in The Starter, right? Because it's one of these things that you kind of alludes to a question that you answered just earlier, where someone reads something in a book and says, "Oh, is that the thing you were talking about 3 books ago?" And that's the whole thing with the parade in The Starter, where they get their parade and their mm-hmm. Quentin is apparently attacked. The star quarterback is attacked, and it turns out not to be attack on him at all. It was an attack on Yitzhak. Yep. So you kind of, from that point, early on in the planning, you had it as Yitzhak being the target, and so therefore must have been more important than we really perceived him to be as a third string quarterback.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I have a question from Alyssa Brogan.
Okay.
For you, Scott. If you had 1 hour to change one thing about one character.
Oh, goddamn.
In one of your stories, would you do it? And if so, what would you change and why?
I don't know. I would say probably not, because unless there is an actual time machine involved, every book in the Siglerverse that I write is so intrinsically intertwined with the next book and 3 books ago and 4 books from now and the shit that John and I work on. I call it the domino effect. And I go through this a lot with A. Like, I'm almost done with the book. Then I'll go, you know what? This character wouldn't do that. And then I'll go back and change one little thing. One little fucking thing. And that one little fucking thing I change causes me another 4 weeks of work, causes John another 2 weeks of work, makes the publisher say, what the fuck are you doing? You're late. So that's what I call the house of cards, the domino effect. You pull one little thing that looks like the ace of clubs doesn't look that big of a deal. You pull it out, everything fucking collapses. So the answer is no. God damn it. Fucking no. I'm not doing that shit. I wrote it. It's in print. Deal with it.
I will also add 100% no. Scott would not do this for any reason. But for me, from my perspective, the reason is 1 hour is not enough. If he only had 1 hour, he couldn't. He couldn't possibly. If he had an infinite number of hours to change one character in one way, would he do it? Yes, infinitely. But not in 1 hour.
The reason John works with us is I can't process that shit. My brain is not wired for that shit. All right, here we go.
A couple of questions for both of you gentlemen. This one's from Steve Smith. Since the Krakens are a Quith irradiated team, do their colors, the orange and the black, have anything to do with the Quith eye colors, the joy and the rage?
You son of a bitch. Yes, absolutely. What you just said is shit that John and I have talked about 100 times. 100 times. Well done. Well fucking
finally,
done.
Finally, someone else figured it out.
Also, all you guys watching, I will say that I'm pretty sure the person, the human, the gorgeous gentleman who created the Quith eye color chart is Mr. John Vizcarra. That's what I think.
But that was reverse engineered, though. I didn't create the colors that go for the emotions. That was the chart was created from what had been written.
100%. But the idea that Kevin he was referencing a chart son. Before you created it, not true.
No, honey,
I'm not the one to consult on color. That's you know that.
No.
I'm not telling John that single, sort of I'm not telling that single press story right now. But okay, let's go.
But now
go.
I'm
let's
embarrassed because I just did the same thing. For those of you who are not in the know, John, who just outed himself, is colorblind. So that was probably
babe,
a thing I should have
can
known.
You email that one directly to me so I can then pretend I made that shit up? That'd
you
be great.
Sure,
fabulous.
Let me circle that.
Excellent question.
I also wanted to mention on the previous question about rewriting things. Mm-hmm. I think the closest that Scott's been able to do that kind of thing where he gets an opportunity to revisit and rewrite is when he's been taking these originally podcast novels and getting them in print for the first time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He does get to redo stuff. It certainly is way more than an hour, but it's an opportunity to clean up plot holes, do more robust character development and all that kind of thing. So that has been explored to some degree, but it's not something once those canon books are established, going back and revisiting them to find something that you would care enough about that you would want to change, it would be so intrinsically intertwined with all the rest of the continuity and every other story that it'd be impossible to take.
Yeah, you can't. Sure. The problem with writing in a continuity and really paying very not only close attention to the continuity, but bringing someone on board who understands, who has a better mind for continuity than I have, is this shit is threaded out. If I live to be 100, we've got shit that's threaded out for the next 50 years. I'm not even kidding. So it's a big issue. We can't just change things. Yep, ready to go.
Sean Dyer in the chat room, thank you for sharing that color chart. I have another question from Shane Birchwood for both of you guys. And it is, if What action would Sigler be if Sigler was a verb?
It would be something dirty, I'm pretty sure. And I'm going to go and switch camera over here so my wife can pretend like this isn't actually happening. But I'm going to guess if Sigler was a verb, there definitely would be some kind of lubricant involved.
No, no,
probably a Vulcan. I'm going to guess probably a crankshaft from a 1972 Dodge Duster. And then I think really just to make it, you know, so that the people down, the people home, down home people on the farm can get along with it, I think a pint of whole milk. There you go. That is what it would be.
No hula hoop, no bar yeah!
No! No, that's, John, that's dirty shit. Pookie's a dirty, dirty man. No, no, we don't do, not in this house. No, we're pure as the driven snow around here.
So for you guys who are going to listen to the podcast and are not watching this live, I will say, while John thinks if he would like to add a definition for a verb, which I don't know why he would after that, but you could if you want to. We have Steve Rickenberg in the chat room saying it would definitely mean jumping on a table in public. True.
That's happened.
Sean Dyer, just like John, asks, wouldn't it require a hula hoop?
Yep.
Daryl Harris might win the day. The verb is an increase in girthiness.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. There's a lot.
John, do you have anything to add?
I don't know if John wants to add to this, considering this is a workplace environment.
Yeah, you can't touch perfection. Not the best answer that I think it could have happened.
Okay,
I'm sure someone wrote down what the fuck that the Sigler verb means. And yeah, next question, baby girl, let's go.
Okay, George Gray asks, you are always so forthcoming on social media, unlike some other authors.
Yep.
Can you tell us one thing hardly anybody knows about you?
Oh, okay, that's a very, okay. One thing hardly anybody knows about me is, that a lot of the personality you guys see on this show and on the podcast, all of this stuff is, I'm very lucky in that this is all just super, this is my natural native state. When I'm in front of people, I'm kind of I'm naturally an entertainer. I usually like the people I hang out with and want to entertain the people I hang out with. And so the shit I do that you guys see, this isn't an act, this is me, but there's a lot of stuff that's very much under the surface that I don't talk about on a regular basis because I don't think, I'll make this short. From my own perspective, when a creator talks about this crippling anxiety or this crippling anxiety or this thing, I think that kind of detracts from the story that's being created and makes the story the creator. And I prefer to create things where you get to appreciate that story as part of your escapism from your own problems. So I guess the things you don't see are the mental, emotional, societal issues that I have. I just keep all that down. Like, that's why in Sigler Junkies, everybody's great about, and there's no politics, there's no talk about bigger things. On
also, Two Pups, One Cup.
Two Pups, One Cup, Facebook.com/ScottSigler, the newsletter, everything. We really try to bring a lot of the positive, because all of us have a fucking shit ton of negative that is always lurking around like sharks looking for a way to bite us in the ass. So the things that bite me in the ass, I just don't share that with you guys, because you've all got your own ass bitten, and you don't need to deal with my shit. And that's my answer.
So I'm going to do a lightning round with Scott for a few questions. But before I do, John, I want you to know that the question I'm going to ask you after these handful of three or four or five questions that are rapid for Scott is from Baza in Sydney, which is, what is your favorite insult in The Rookie? So it'll give you a little bit of time. And I assume because this is the adult version of The Rookie, he's incorporating any insult in The Rookie. So in the meantime, while you think about that, I'm going to ask you a handful of rapid fire questions, Scott.
Okay, let's go.
In the Stone, from Todd Taylor in The Stone Wolves, did the inspiration for the Ponsky sisters come from the world famous Pontani sisters who often tour in support of Los Straitjackets?
Not at all. Not familiar with them, but I'd like to know more. Next question.
Okay. Yeah, great. I'm from Steve Mazur. I'm a longtime fan since the earliest podcast. I deeply love the original version of The Rookie, but I've always wondered the following. Did your original plans for the stories and the characters change subtly or majorly when the target audience for the GFL was moved into the young adult category?
Almost zero changes. They're literally, the edit for the published version of The Rookie was primarily for language. And secondarily, there were a couple little things I was happy to have the opportunity to clean up. But no, it's basically the same story, just without the word fuck in it.
From Daryl Harris, will the gate technology from Infected ever show up in future stories?
Yes. Next question.
Also from Baza O'Donnell. Oh, no, no, that's the big one. Hang on. There's another one in here somewhere. I just have to... from J.R. Murdoch, he says, others have written novellas outside the main story, but still tied to the main story of the GFL. Will Scott write any other stories in this same vein or longer before or after the GFL is set in other worlds, not Earth?
No, we're done with the novellas. We have six. We think they're great. I really think The Stone Wolves is a fucking fantastic. We finished, I think, with a writer in The Stone Wolves. I'm absolutely delighted with that. Props to Paul Cooley. The Fiendmaster did a great job on the writer, and props to J.C. Hutchins for The Stone Wolves.
All of them. They were great.
Absolutely outstanding work, but we have other things that we want to get to before I kick the bucket. So, no, you're not going to hear any more of those stories.
Owen O'Connor, my brethren.
Fucking great name.
Yeah. Owen O'Connor asks, are novelists born or made?
Oh, my God. Okay. Let's go to Maine. That's a
rapid fire
question. I believe that novelists, it's both. I believe that you have to have a predilection for wanting to tell stories and also wanting to self-flagellate with a cat of nine tails on your own back all the time and drag yourself through an endless morass of barbs and rhubarb and all the other things that end in the word barb. If you don't enjoy pain, you don't want to be a novelist. At the same time, if you were someone who does enjoy pain, but you couldn't grab a storytelling stick with both hands if your butt was on fire, you can learn, like I did, to work through that and develop the skills in order to make sure your constant self-flagellation is going to result in a story that people will like. So it's both.
Okay, so I have two more questions, John, just so you're ready, and then I'll come
good
back
job,
to you.
Steve Rickenberg. Plus
Steve
10.
Rickenberg in the chat room said, justice for Barb.
Justice
oh, wait,
for
not
Barb.
That kind of Barb.
Fuck that. Like, they just, the Stranger Things people are like, fuck Barb. We don't care about Barb. I love Barb. Let's
we
go.
Love Barb. Barb is Pookie Chang. Barb was supposed to be the throwaway character that nobody would forgive.
Everybody remembered that bitch. Yep. Everybody remembered her. Yep.
Owen O'Connor also asks, when you sold...
Oh, wait. Did we get back to John and his?
Not yet. We've got two more questions.
Let's go.
One, rapid fire. When you sold your first piece of writing, how did you celebrate?
Well, let's go back to main cam. There are some stories that you people never get to know. But I will say... There was an Irish bar in Ann Arbor, Michigan. There was probably a couple of rounds of me getting up on the bar.
Shocker.
In the Irish bar in Michigan. And having people I thought that were faking Irish accents working behind the bar tell me, get the fuck off the bar. Only much later did I learn these were not fake Irish accents. These were actually
and
people
from Ireland.
And they
literally wanted you to get off the
fucking
bar.
And they literally wanted me. This wasn't a game, bro. It's not a game. Get your fucking dirty feet off the bar.
The bar
where we're serving you fucking drinks and all these other people. And there may have been a couple of fights involved. It was a long night and there was a lot of black and tans. That is all I can say at this moment.
So
next
it
question.
Turns out that Steve Rickenberg is right. For the verb for Sigler, it means to stand up on a table.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your last rapid fire question comes from Marius Bompanato. He
yes,
says, I know the Sklorno take names for football famous Earth cities. So what did Volgograd do for football?
Okay. That's actually a good question because, of course, the inspiration for that was Brazilian soccer players, footballers, who just decide, you know what, my name's Fred, fuck you, no last name, Fred, bitch, that's my name, and remember it when I score many goals upon you. So that was kind of the inspiration for this, but eventually, not everybody can be New York. Not everybody can be St. Louis. You can't all be Los Angeles. Eventually,
not everybody was Marie Antoinette in a past life.
Correct. Eventually, you run out of shit, and you wind up with like names like Toppenabee and Sheboygan and Des Moines. That's what you wind up with.
First two both in Michigan. Third one in, of course, Des Moines.
I don't know where fuck Des Moines is, to be honest.
I don't know. Fucking some I state. Okay, so now we're bringing John back into the fold to ask the very important question that inquiring minds need to know.
Okay.
What was your favorite insult in The Rookie? John.
It's impossible to pick one. It's the creme de la creme is basically anything out of Chick McGee's mouth.
I mean, good call.
He's got so many just beautiful insults throughout, not just The Rookie, but through the whole series.
Yeah, good call.
I cannot pick one, but every time I hear Chick McGee saying something that is an insult, it actually makes me physically put my hand in my in my head and shake, because I know it's just awful.
And I actually read that question maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and I couldn't, without looking, I couldn't come up with one, because there's, like you say, there's so many. You don't have something in mind, I would imagine.
No, I yeah. don't. I there's a lot of insults in the Sigmaverse. I can't possibly keep up.
Chicks are very verbose, so it's hard to remember just one, because he has these layers of insult on, you know, one on top of another. But
so let's see. Okay, so that was Mario. Let me see.
All right, we got...
we got a little bit of time.
Oh, we're good. Yeah, let's roll. Rock and roll. All you guys hanging out. Okay, you know what? We're going to take a break real quick before we go back to questions, because I told people at the end of the episode we're going to talk about what's coming next. I'm not going to make you guys wait 5 more minutes while I drunkenly jabber through these answers. So, real quick, here's what's coming up next week. This is why December 14th is very important. And if there's other reasons December 14th is very important, I don't fucking know. I'm not trying to make a point. This is why it's important. So what we're going to do next week... For the first time in the history of man fucking kind, I will write a story on Friday for this new property I'm going to tell you about in a second. Then on Wednesday for the live stream, I'm going to read it live to you. So you'll be the first persons in the world to hear it other than the two of us. Then we take the audio from the Wednesday read that gets edited, put into the feed, that becomes a Sunday podcast feed. We take the video, and the video is going to be done in 10-minute chunks, and we're going to put the video on Instagram stories, on Snapchat, on Facebook stories, on Facebook, on YouTube. We're going to put up the episodes and label TikTok, everything. We're going to label everything accordingly, so that if you have a preferred social media platform, you're going to be able to get this. And then we're hopefully going to put a little countdown timer, so it's 10 minutes ticking down. So when you see it, if you're a short attention span like me, you're like, okay, you know what? I got 10 minutes. I can take 10 minutes. I can watch this. I can listen to this. And there's a couple other crazy shit we're going to do, too, that we haven't quite got to yet. This is all an experiment. I think this is a huge potential to develop a Wednesday night community where we all get to fucking hang out and listen to a story. Because the first half hour is telling the story. The second half hour is talking about the story and also about Sigmaverse stuff and fun stuff. But part of that second 30 minutes will be hopefully telling you guys, like, what did you think? What do you think this character would do next? And maybe some of that will get baked into the story. So it's sort of a live boiling pot experiment in creating some crazy fiction that you guys might get to be a part of. That is the strategy that we are entering. Yeah? Something, baby?
If you guys have never or weren't around for the very, very, very first Nocturnal podcast, this is a very similar thing to that. He would write during the week and record on Saturday and publish as a podcast on Sunday. And I just mentioned earlier in the cast, he had thought Pookie would be a pretty disposable character.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And after the second episode, he got a bunch of emails saying, if you kill that motherfucker Pookie, you're in trouble.
You all knew. You all fucking knew.
So Pookie, of course, lives on.
So let me give you a brief spoiler on the content. Some of you may have followed me on Facebook at facebook.com/Scott Sigler. Some of you may have seen the comment about the sex gnomes.
You guys.
That's actually for real. There are really sex gnomes in this. There's a lot of crazy shit. The basic premise is this.
Before you say anything, Scott Sigler,
yes,
you had this morning, or at lunchtime, you had said you have a whole extra day. You have all day tomorrow to decide between the two properties. So if you say this now, you're stuck.
No, fuck them. If I say this now, if I say this now and I change my mind, that's on y'all.
Hey,
there's nothing
Harper,
I can
nice
do.
To see
we
you,
have sorted
honey.
Through 26 different stories that I have wanted to write forever and a day to get down to this one. Including two that the boss, the CEO, said, you cannot do this in this fashion because those are going to be, she knows these are bigger things that I have bigger plans for, so we can't really, we can't do them this way. So we picked a property that I think would be very entertaining, but is also not quite as fully formed as the others. So I won't, not bullshit, this is not well thought out, well plotted. This is going to be largely my first experience writing as a gardener, which is plant the seeds and see where the story goes. I've talked to Wayland at We're Alive, and like, we'll have a rough outline for the season, but if things change, we will go to the changes. So here's the story. So the basic story is this. In a nutshell, you've got your Van Helsings, you've got your Buffies, you've got your Winchesters, you've got all the great monster hunting people of the world that always seem to do this shit and put themselves at massive personal risk, and they get paid diddly squat. And this is a story called Slay about a man named Lincoln Franks who has been a monster hunter. And then at some point, Lincoln Franks says, you know what? You motherfuckers keep putting me in the way of all these minotaurs and dragons and demons and ghosts and goblins and succubuses and all this other shit. And I'm done with this shit. Do you want me to kill a monster? Fucking pay me. Fucking pay me. So it's pay to slay is the general concept.
Pay to slay.
And there is an enormous amount of family damage in this cat that you guys are going to get to see. But that is the gist of the story. There's a lot of drugs involved. There's a lot of booze involved. There's a lot of blood involved. And there's a lot of fucking sex gnomes involved. And that is what you guys have looked forward to. So please join us next week, December 14th, Wednesday. We're going to do our first live read. I would love for all of you to be there. But if you miss it, it will be in all the feeds. Everything will be fine.
And as you guys already know about a Q&A, they're spoilerific. What you will learn next week is the swear jar goes the fuck away.
Oh, there's no swear jar. There's no swear jar.
In the live
also,
read.
Also, if you guys like to listen to my shit with your kids, I highly recommend you change your mind.
I do have a couple questions for John and Scott as well, but I do want to say in the note, can you give me back this, please?
Yep.
So I do want to say, related to that, there were several questions that sort of read like Joe Bolvin's question, which is this one. Did you announce an upcoming date for GFL Book 7 pre-order? I understand the books may or may not come out in 2023. I'm just wondering if you have an update. As you know, we junkies look forward to getting a low number limited edition hardcover for our collection, almost as much as we look forward to the actual book. So here's the thing, you guys. No, we haven't. I have said, Scott has said several times, we hope that it is out sometime in late 2023. However, we learned our lesson with the gangster, and there is not going to bum rush the pre-order. That's not going to happen. We are going to put it up as a book for purchase. And I know that stinks. We are still working on whether or not we're going to do, how we're going to do signings, how we're going to do like big book plates so that you can get a personalization, things like that. We're still working on that part. But what we know in the New World Order with supply chain issues, and after the disaster that was 20 months waiting for Gangster, we're almost assuredly going to do this as a print-on-demand hardcover. And so you will be able to order the book when the book is ready to be shipped to you.
And
then we'll figure
it
out. Like I said, we've thought about lotteries. If you guys have any ideas, please email them. We thought about 1,000 things to number these books. But in the New World reality, which is a pandemic that's full of supply issues, it is unfair to us and to you to ever go through the Gangster pre-order again that took almost 3 years. So we're not going to do that again.
You know what? Fuck it. Fuck it. We throw in the towel. You motherfuckers win. You fucking win. For all the fucking work we did, we had the motherfucking company that did the Country Music Awards voting. Okay. The Country Music Awards voting.
Okay,
and we broke their shit.
Okay.
All right, I'm all right.
Ben Fraley, maybe you can have a Jawa sign it. I'm just saying.
God damn it.
But no, seriously, what we're thinking of
There's
doing...
There's not enough scotch to do this goddamn show. Not enough.
Shush. And he's out of scotch, and I spilled my whole drink. So I'm sober. I'll finish the cast. It's okay. With John. But before we get back to John, I will say... we will figure out how to have them personalized. Right now, the contender, if you guys have any ideas, feel free to email them, but make sure they're fully formed ideas, not have you thought about book plates. Because I think about book plates every day. The current idea is a translucent book plate that is about the same size as your end paper, that's about 6 inches by 9 inches, that we have Scott individualize and write a personalized message to you, and we will ship it to you if you ask for it. That's our current thing, but we're nowhere near getting ready to ship this book. It is John has done his review. I've done one review. Scott is about to go into the, whenever it is time, he'll go into the final edit. But that's probably not until at least halfway through 2023. And we'll figure that out. So if you have ideas that are more than suggestions, please email them to info@empty.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that is the news for the next thing. I hope to see you guys next Wednesday. We're going to do 50 more minutes of lightning round questions. But by all means, if you got to go about your business and take care of your kids and all your pets and all that shit, go crazy. We're going to do 50 minutes of lightning round shit. And at this point, I've had two scotches. I am no longer responsible.
No longer responsible
for my emotional reaction. Serenity now! Let's go.
Okay, so this is a question for John and for Scott individually. John, why don't you go first? Give him a moment to calm down. Which book or author from growing up had the greatest impact on you, and did that influence your work with Scott?
So when I was a kid, I was a comic book nut. And for absolute certain, the exposure of Marvel Comics and the way that they wrote all in the same world and established a continuity world and universe that was common to all the books that they wrote, or the majority of the books that they wrote, mm-hmm. absolutely is what drew me to Scott's books. Once I started reading, you know, I read one or two of his books, that was great. And then as I started to recognize the plot points and the connections between the different properties, that's really what drew me to him. And it absolutely was a wonderful thing to discover that he had this whole universe all thought out and was continually dropping new pieces into it. And then for me to be able to be a part of that was just icing on the cake.
Wonderful. What about you? What story or series from your childhood or author influenced the way you write today?
Well, it's. I would say now, Marvel's a huge influence. The Marvel, the chronological watch through mm-hmm. has validated what I've done and changed the way we're going to do things because it's so fun. It's so flat out fun to watch these little Easter eggs pop up. I'm drawing a little bit of a blank on what I read that brought up.
I don't think you're all that much different than John. I think
comic books were probably a huge part of it.
And RPGs influenced you.
Well, the RPGs, the storytelling style we set up when I Game Mastered the Champions in Dungeons and Dragons, and knowing that this thing, if I tell you this thing on February, 1986, and then 1989, it pops back up again, watching people lose their fucking mind when they're like, what is, it's just an absolute delight as a storyteller. I mean, I'd probably agree with John on that. It's because I was a huge consumer of comic books back in the day, and comic books were the only place, and comic books, not comic book TV shows, the only place you saw continuous storylines and people popping back up in a long style of storytelling was comic books up until we had 24 and Lost and shit like that. All right, next question.
So I'll just add quickly, I can't remember the name of the series because it's not the Xanth series by Pierce Anthony, but there was another series, I'm pretty sure it's Pierce Anthony, where it was two worlds on the same planet but out of phase, and one was science and one was magic.
That's the Adept series.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Nicely done.
Oh my God.
That is the reason I went to school and studied chemistry, because I really, really, really wanted to study acting and be a theater major, which I was as well. But my parents, who were wonderful to me, they were like, cool, that's fantastic. If you look at that as a career, I don't mean to say you should have something to fall back on, but you should be multifaceted. Which was a nice way not to say, like, oh, honey, you're not going to be a famous actor. But you should have something. And so that really influenced me there. So I have another question for both of you guys. This is from the Reed Locketts, who are good friends, personal good friends of ours.
Yep, let's
go. A lot of you might have met them at Siglerfest. For each of you, what do you think is your superpower? And can you give an example?
I'll be right there. I'll do mine first. My superpower is the ability to go to sleep almost anywhere, almost anytime, get actual good sleep. Hey, next.
It's John. It's John.
John, next. Yeah. Let's go, John.
My superpower is not being the Scott described me as the file cabinet, but I think I'm more of the index system. Being able to figure out how to find something out instead of actually just knowing it—it's a very easy thing to fool people into making them think you're smarter than you are.
Yeah, you had said that by text with us a little while ago. Like, oh, I also fooled you guys too. But I have always thought of your mind sort of as a Rolodex. Like, you can let me go back a little bit and figure out the thing, and you just need a little thread to get in there, and then you can find it. Yeah. Which I love. I think that's fantastic. Okay, there was one more for both of you. Oh, there's actually three very rapid-fire questions for all three of us. Robbie Claire asks, number one, what is your current favorite cocktail?
Oh.
Yours is scotch, sir.
Well, I think that's not a cocktail,
that's
though.
That's okay. That's the thing you drink every day.
My favorite right now is just straight up scotch, get in my belly. They wrote that movie for me. That's the whole thing. All right, now,
John, do you? I'm not sure how much you drink, so I'm not sure if you have a favorite cocktail.
I don't drink that much anymore, but I have something that my wife makes, which is super yummy. We call it a fancy drink, and it's got like pomegranate juice and cherry juice and flavored soda water and limeade mixed together over ice, and it's just delicious.
We call it
the fancy drink, and I have at least one a day.
I love it. We are getting together with a handful of a very small handful of friends for New Year's Eve because it's very COVID crazy right now in the United States. And I'm working on two cocktails that I want to bring because we're sort of hosting the cocktail part of the event. And I'm working on a blood orange, I guess, margarita. That's currently my favorite because I taste it every day.
All right, here we go.
Nope, there's two. These are, and then what is your favorite food right now?
Favorite food right now is Kung Pao shrimp. Next.
And John?
My mom's ribs recipe, which she left to me, and that I just absolutely love her barbecue ribs.
And do you make it often, or is it a special occasion food?
It's a special occasion thing, and it's usually maybe once or twice a year.
Oh, I love it. I have no favorite food. I love all foods. But right now I really love Korean food. I'm working on a lot of Korean things because he loves spicy food. So, okay, so next, Kim Hansen asked you, Scott.
Yep.
Important question, since the quith smell like onions, is that raw or cooked onions?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to have to go with cooked onions on that one because cooked onions smell amazing.
Oh, excuse me. Let's see. Question for also from Kim Hansen on Cormorant Bumblepuff.
Yep.
Along with the mention of how a captain would never be the first person to leave a ship and make contact with aliens, Bumblepuff sounds quite a lot like he's channeling William Shatner Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
Was that Scott's intention? And if so, how much so?
It was 100% our intention. A was with me in the small, the small San Francisco office. Then there was a bigger, the bigger office is 468 square feet. And it was four rooms. It was a weird, weird place. The small office is like 12 by 10. And I had the booth set up there, the 4x4 booth. And I remember we were sort of running out. This is sort of before I discovered if I just channel a stand-up comedian and impersonate a stand-up comedian, it's a great way to come up with a new character voice that's very different for me after doing hundreds and hundreds of characters. And we talked about it. We came up with it like, this is the captain of this ship. And what are we going to do? And like, we're both like, oh, fuck. It's just, can you do a Shatner? I'm like, yeah, I can do a Shatner. Not a good Shatner, but I can do a Shatner. And for sure, that was 100%. Without a doubt, Bumblepuff is a unabashed love letter to James T. Kirk.
Okay. There's two questions. I'm going to read this one from Ollie Kirby, and then I will mention after he answers. There's a similar question to that, and I'll try and find it while he's talking. But from Ollie, he asks, we in Australia love The Rookie in both the adult and the YA versions. Yep. How hard was it to rewrite the adult version to make it YA and read as if it was always meant to be like that?
It was very easy because we really basically just changed out the insults. We probably subtracted about 30-40% of the insults, and then we just changed the rest of them. So it was pretty easy. Yeah.
So I'll add, and the secondary question was, are we going to put out all the other books? Because the only The Rookie exists as an adult novel. And somebody asked, are we going to adultify the rest of the novels? And the answer is absolutely not.
Nope.
Because what Scott doesn't remember from 2009 is it wasn't as easy as just finding every fuck and making it shuck, or finding every shit and making it shuck, or whatever. It wasn't that at all. Because there, if you guys have heard, there are a handful of moments on the field, especially, where they're lined up and the linemen are being terrible people to each other. And that kind of goes away in the YA version. And there is no point for us to ever put out an adult version of the rest of those books, because to do that would confuse the marketplace, and we're not in for that. And it would also destroy the fact that we can put the GFL into school libraries. It has to be Lexile rated, and that means they have to be only YA edition. So that will never, ever, ever, ever happen.
Yep. Okay, next one. Here we go.
Let's see. Scott, from Connie Harold, what is the worst advice you received when trying to launch your writing career?
I'd say the worst advice I ever got was from an absolutely fucking delightful human being who was my agent at the time. So I said, you know what? We've been at this 8 years. Nothing's happened. I'm going to start recording my own stories and giving them away as a free podcast. And I was told, don't do that. Whatever you do, do not give away stuff as a podcast. That will screw up the audio rights, and if the audio rights are screwed, that could impact any potential deal I could land for you. And I said, I'm going to go ahead and do this anyway. So that was the worst advice, because I don't have a career without the podcasting. Next.
Okay. Balam Tran asks, tell us a secret, if you can, about one of your characters. He also asked if he won't do it, and you have one, John, you do it. and it is, he says, tell us a secret about one of your characters. What don't we know? Does Q actually have mods? Is Perry still alive?
A secret that they don't know?
Yep.
The fuck do you guys think I do for a living? I'm not going to give you that right now. Go home. It's over. No. Okay, John, anything on your side?
I feel like John will not answer.
I mean, I've got a couple ideas, but I'm not sure whether I should say or not. they're secrets for a reason. Yeah. So there's things that are put into the stories that are not obvious. And you'd have to either work to know them or listen a lot or read a lot to really recognize them.
Fair.
I have one that I wanted to say, but I'm not sure if it's one that I didn't even know until
Can you text it?
Yeah.
And I'll ask a question. Text it to me and I'll ask him a question in the in-between. Dan Williams says, I have restarted the crypt from the beginning from my podcast stocks. Am I to understand there is more crypt to come? The answer to that
Jesus
is
Christ.
Absolutely yes.
This is the thing, trying to reach everybody. And tell, like, look at, like, we go through so many links. Like, we've already told on all the channels, the newsletter, the crypt is coming. The crypt is coming as a finished book.
I think that's fine to share.
Yeah, that's totally fine. We do that next. Yeah. The crypt is coming. We expect it out in 2023. Our partner on that, the publisher, is Aethon. They're doing a great job so far. We're very excited about it. It's going to be 5 books in the series. The first book is called Shakedown. You don't get to know the titles of the other 4 books, but it is some military SF horror shit. That book one only scratches the surface of the horror stuff. It gets bonkers. Okay, let's go.
So John did have a, you guys might never have noticed this, but it's worth sharing.
So this only came about when I was editing The Gangster, which is the 6th book in the series, and what, the 10th or 11th book that was, novella in that series.
Story, yeah.
And it took me that long, and I never even realized it until... Scott mentioned that it was something that he had provided to one of his other editors to use and watch out for. And that is that the Quith do not use contractions. And that's something that's pervasive throughout every book. You won't see the Quith ever saying can't, don't, shan't, or whatever.
Yep.
They do not use contractions.
Yeah, I love that. That's pretty good. Scott, where do you like to write? Do you have a favorite spot? And do you have spots that you won't write in? That's from Lennon Shaw.
I'll make this quick. I have built, before the last 2 years, I built my entire workflow on me, pair of headphones, and a laptop, a Macintosh laptop. So I can go anywhere, and I can write anywhere, and have the experience the same environment all the time. Last 2 years, we've gotten a bigger monitor, which I'll show you guys right now. Look, let's go.
Oh, Lord. That's our monitor. Six alive.
Yep. The bigger monitor has made a great change, because I can have a Siglapedia up on one panel, a Google Doc spreadsheet on the next, and then just a browser on the next. I have all three of those up in front of me. So now working when I'm not in this very office you guys see this from is much more difficult now. Yeah. All right.
So it is 7:30. So we decided we were just going to do 90 minutes because John has a lovely wife and a whole life, and he spent his whole evening with us. And this is longer than you guys are used to hanging out. Anyway, I do have a handful of leftover questions. They're going to go into the normal rotation on Sigler in place.
Great.
If there's something that you guys absolutely need to know before we move forward with the next cast, go ahead and email that to info@emptyscent. I still never am going to know how to do this. There we go.
Hold on. Oh, wait. No, I lied. I fixed this. I fixed this for you, baby, because I love you. There you go. Info and set bottom of the screen.
Oh, great. Terrific. In the meantime, John, is there anything else that you wanted to say on this cast?
No, it's been a blast. I've really enjoyed this time and answering questions and contributing to the content.
Absolutely. We, of course, you know this. We love you and Kim to death. We love that all the work you do for us, and we love to work with you. So thank you so much for coming on 2 weeks in a row and everything else you guys do for us.
Yep. My pleasure. All right, John, we're going to, in our very slick production style, we're going to hang the fuck up on you now. That's what we do. Good day, sir.
Love you.
And end meeting for all. Boom. And now we go back to this. Sylvia, welcome to the fold. Thank you so much for joining us and reading all of the books. Everybody in the chat room, all the lovely, lovely
Nico
stuff that
nice
you are
to
saying.
See you right at the last minute.
And good night to you all. It was so much fun to have John on the show. It's great. John is like a data chip in the head, and having the ability to just be like, dude, I am melting down. I've written for 20 hours straight. What the fuck is this and this and this? And John's real calm, like, okay, let me take a look at that. I think that was in book three. And then also this paragraph here. It is just an absolute joy. And I don't think a lot of authors have that. I don't think a lot of authors have that. So yeah. I'm eminently grateful to John, dear friend, and thank you for being on.
Yeah, and babe. I will also say, John has this sort of innate ability to never say, like, oh my God, really? Did you forget that Pookie died? Which he didn't. That's not a spoiler. Or something like that. He's
not yet.
Never rude about it. Ever. He's like, listen, I just wanted to point out, like, if you look at this page in this book and you go to page 17 in this book, you can see that that is not really what you said before. So maybe you can do it this way. He is so lovely and polite. Yeah. So I love that. Thank you so much for joining us, John. Right. I do one more thing I want to say before we do our closing.
Yep.
Jay Freak from Twitch, 7.75.94. You are welcome. We try really hard. We work with the Blind Library of Congress as well to try and make our books available whenever people need them. But that's a big reason. Part of it is, of course, that Scott started as a podcaster. But it's also, you know, entertainment should be as accessible as it can be. And so we try our hardest to do that. If you guys are not in the chat room right now, JFreak7594 mentioned that he appreciates having, or they appreciate having, sorry, books available to blind readers or vision impaired readers. So
yep.
We
All
try
right.
and do the best we can there.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, is that it, babe? Can I
That's
continue
it?
The, do you go to the outro? All right, so let's go.
Oh,
you
okay,
don't need that.
So
I left there, my bad.
So,
I'll jump
on.
Yeah, you take
well,
that
I'll
one.
Do it. So if you guys have any additional questions, if any of this brought up another question, if Scott's explanation of what's starting next week garnered any questions, go ahead and email them to info@emptyscent. info@emptyscent is the best way to get in touch with us for any problem you have. Until then, I think we'll be back.
We'll be back December 14th. And while I will not promise how much of this will go into the story, there will be sex gnomes. There will be dragons in bondage gear.
Mm.
And there will be well-hung monitors. So,
okay. So some
we
of
want
that is
to,
new to me. So we'll see if that lasts tomorrow.
Surprise, baby.
Yeah.
Surprise.
Yeah.
We'll start a new show. So until then, we want you to stay smart.
And you guys, stay science. Read the news. Protect yourselves.
And for the love of science, make sure you pay attention to people who've actually studied science their whole gosh darn lives and have little initials to prove that they did, and not people who just want to get a bunch of clicks. That's what we promised to you. And now we're
going to go Lions.
Also, go Lions. 4 out of 5. If we lose the rest of the games, I still think it's a fucking fabulous season. And go Jets.
Jets.
Still in the playoff spot. We want you all now. We'd be
Isaac,
rude.
I am also scared.
We want you all to kiss off into the sky. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. We will see you next week with a brand new story. You will be the first people in the world to hear any part of this story if you join us on December 14th. Now you can all kiss up in the sky. Ready, baby?
Yep.
You have been listening to The Rookie, Book 1 of the Galactic Football League series. Produced by Arioch Morningstar with post-production by Steve Rickyberg. Written and performed by Scott Sigler. For more information on the author and more free stories, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song The Kids Are Coming For You by the band Superweapon. Superweaponband.com. You're trying to say